Today is Friday, March 29th, 2019. In attendance are Senator Birch, Senator Hughes, Senator Costello, and myself, Stevens. We have a quorum to conduct business. Today we're going to be hearing Senate Bill 74, sponsored by Senator Hoffman, relating to internet broadband in schools, and also taking up SGR 9, sponsored by Senator Costello, relating to a constitutional amendment requiring early education funding. Currently, my intent is to pass these bills from committee today. Any questions before we start? This time we'll have Senate Bill 74 before us, version M, with an OCS and any amendments. Senator Hoffman, any comments you care to make?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Senator Hoffman from Senate District S. I'm here to answer any additional questions that committee members may have.
I think we all had a chance to look through this. Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman, I'm just curious, since looks like both of our bills will move out of committee today. I'm wondering if they could be shepherded throughout the whole entire process together.
If Roman insists.
Thank you. Senator Hughes, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I just have a comment. I think this is an important bill, and this is the right time for it, for what our state is facing, and a way to help our students across the state. I also would say that when we learned at the last committee meeting that I don't remember the phrase they used, the ideal number of megabits is really 100, and that should be our target. And so I hope as this bill moves forward, there'd be consideration for stair-stepping it so that as a certain number of schools reach the threshold of the 25, that then we could up it, and so that we don't have to continually do these bills, stair-stepping it up, but we get it set so over time, as schools are ready and as we have the funding, they can go all the way up to 100 megabytes eventually, because I think that's going to be best for our students overall and our schools across the state. So I hope the future committees will consider adding the stair-stepping.
Thank you. Further comments? Do we have the department here, Department of Education? Yes, please, good to see you. If you'd come forward.
For the record, Patience Fredrickson, Alaska State Library Archives and Museums, Director.
Thank you. Thank you, Patience, good to see you again. Any comments you have? Can you talk about the fiscal note as well?
Yes, sir. The one comment that the division has on the text of the bill is the phrase "a minimum of." That would open a lot of issues with the school districts calling us and asking us, does that mean they can go to 26, 27, 50, or 100 megabits per second? For clarity, it would be most helpful if this version read, bring the applicant share to 25 megabits of download a second. We've had problems with this in the past, administering the 10 megabits per second.
Where are you suggesting that in the bill?
The underlined phrase, a minimum of, on the next to last line of the bill, the phrase a minimum of is problematic for administration of the program. It's very much clearer if it just says 225 megabits per second.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Patience. We'll get the sponsor to reply to that shortly here. Any further comments on the fiscal note?
No, sir. The fiscal note is written as though we could start the program right away. We would also suggest that this bill have an effective date of September. The E-rate, in order for the schools to apply for E-rate, there's a filing window in the spring, and then they do a grant application to the school bag program, and those two applications have to agree. The E-rate filing window closed 2 days ago. Therefore, an effective date of September 2019 on this bill will give us one more year of the school bag program at 10 megabits, and then as of July next year, we would go into the school bag program at 25 megabits per second. If the effective date is actually September, then the we would not need the $8,667,300 for the FY 2020 appropriation requested. School bag at 1.487.5 is in the governor's budget right now. And so if we run the program at 10 megabits, that 1.4875 will cover the cost for FY 20. And then in FY 21, we would need what is shown in the fiscal note. So it's a matter of when the program starts up. In order to start this program up, we have to revise the regulations, which takes a while. We have to revise the grant application, which is not very difficult. But the main thing on the grant application is that we benchmark what the school is paying for internet at a certain month. So if we were to issue the grant application next spring and ask them, what was your district paying for internet for each school, say in January 2020, then school bag going forward would hold them at that January 2020 cost permanently, and the state would pay the remaining cost to get them up to 25 megabits per second. So it's a matter of, it's a fairly technical program, and the benchmark really needs to be set the same for all of the school districts that would come into this new program. That's why we urge an effective date of September 2019. The fiscal note, other than that, we went to the FCC, to the E-rate program, and we ran a search on their database, and we came up with 245 schools at less than 25 megabits per second end of February, the beginning of this month. And so in FY 2019, the average school bag cost per school was $16,594. Multiplied those 245 schools times that amount, and then the proportional increase, we said we were going from 10 to 25 megabits, so we multiplied it by 2.5 to get to the final $10 million fiscal note for this program. I think that's about it. There are no positions associated with this program. We do add money onto our contract for the E-rate consultant. She does the lion's share of review of the grant applications and works with the school districts to get them into compliance so we can certify them as eligible.
Thank you, Mr. Fredrickson. Thanks so much. Any questions of patients? Yes, please.
Actually, just more of a comment. I'm just curious. It seems like that effective date issue is more of a programmatic and fiscal issue, and since the sponsor sits on the Senate Finance Committee, I would just suggest that that be left for the committee to decide, because a bill only goes into effect 90 days after the governor signs it, so that is about the timeline that you need anyway, and then we do have the official record of our conversation, and so I think that's something we could put on record, the intention of the legislature in terms of how it would best work for the program to go into effect.
Very good. Thank you. Further comments? Thank you, Ms. Fredrickson.
Okay,
appreciate
it.
Senator Hoffman, you've heard the suggestion from the department. Any comments on that? And the suggestion is that where it says a minimum of 25, that it be changed to 225 megabits of download a second.
I have no problem with that. Conceptual amendment.
Great. Thank you, Senator. Any questions on that? Can I have a minute, please? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I offer a conceptual amendment to Senate Bill 74, version M. On line 7, I would like to strike the words, a minimum of, and that's the amendment.
Thank you. That's very clear and simple. Any objection to that? If not, we made that conceptual amendment, and thank you very much, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you.
Any closing comments?
No closing comments.
Okay.
Thanks
thank
for
you,
consideration of this bill.
Thanks. That concludes our invited testimony. Moving on to public testimony, is there any public testimony on this bill at this time? Very well. We'll close the public testimony, and any other comments from? Oh, I'm sorry. We do have some. I didn't see those, so I'm sorry. David Gutenberg, good to hear from you, Representative Gutenberg. Now, please, if you can hear us, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Your Highness. Can you hear me?
Stop it. Just stop it, David. Yes, we can hear you. A little too well.
Thank you. So I want to thank you, Senator Hoffman, for bringing the bill forward. This is an important bill. Last year it didn't quite make it through the process. On the last hearing, the first hearing on the bill, you heard quite a bit from the educational experts. And I would just say that at the least, that they minimize the impact of what bringing broadband to these schools would have, and not just the schools, to if community, more of these communities had connectivity and a sustainable high-speed broadband, portable, then all of a lot significant increases in the quality of life and education opportunities. And we talk about diversifying the economy. I don't think we can do it until we have that. But this bill bringing broadband to students across the state, and Senator Hoffman's comment about this is not just for rural schools, many parts of the interior, many parts of the interior suffer from long-term suffer from lack of decent broadband or no broadband at all. Endless conversations with their ISPs, the service providers, like no end in sight. The industry has just tells them all kinds of things, but there's no ever a time when they're going to get it. Senator Hughes asked about, isn't this industry regulated? And it's not, for some reason. Part of my bane as a legislator, the RCA refuses to recognize that the internet is a telecommunication, and that is pretty bizarre. Outside of the FCC, which has the only entity which really has control of it, and they preempted other states, there's a lot of things that the states can do, and a lot of states are doing it. The Universal Service Fund is a tax, so though people will say it isn't, it is a tax. And the Alaska USF is also a tax. Even though the money flows right into a specific fund and gets – it is a tax. And part of the problem, what's disturbing about the situation we have in Alaska, is that certainly for our schools, is that there's a higher, ever escalating higher demand for internet, and there's no control of costs or connectivity or infrastructure. Fiscal note explains, and patients Hendrickson from the libraries last week said the about $145 million a year goes into this gets spent towards internet for schools, and it's going to go up this 10%. The legislature told the RCA in the last couple of years to produce reports on internet, and they're available to you. You can ask for them. I don't think they were distributed unless you asked for them, but they were significant as far as broadband in Alaska, more likely into rural Alaska instead of rural and bush Alaska. The question was about, and I'm going to expand out sometime because I'm the public now. Internet Alaska, there's billions of dollars going into infrastructure from tax money. The Alaska plan is about $1.3 billion over 10 years. The first net, which is the public safety program, is about $1 billion over 10 years. Ms. Nickerson said there's $145 million a year. The Alaska Universal Service Fund is about $26 million a year. Past grants that have gone to entities in the state are $100 million a year. I don't have the exact figure on that. But my point is that there is no infrastructure or no guiding hand that says we need infrastructure and not just escalating costs into our rural schools or rural communities or our urban schools and urban communities. All the reports that have been done, including the state's broadband task force report, recommends that there is some quasi-government entity to point out where these deficiencies are to build out an infrastructure. And part of the broadband task force report that puts people back is the, you know, the estimated cost of $1.3 billion. Then that was about 8 years ago, which is probably higher. And people could sit back. But when you look at, when you go to buy a home and it's $300,000, you don't say, I don't have $300,000 in my pocket. You have a source of income. You have a job. Your wife has a job. You know, it's steady. You go to the bank. You can borrow the money. There's billions of dollars coming into Alaska in public funds now that could pay for the infrastructure with a hand that just points out the places where we don't have it. We're going to keep paying higher and higher costs, and we're not going to have any infrastructure in place. And as technology changes, it's going to keep going up. We have the money coming into the state. It's already there. We just don't have a guiding hand on not dominating private market, because the private market is the entity that does it so well, but spending our tax money wisely to build out an infrastructure for these schools so they can look around, turn around, look back and say, imagine a time when we only had 25 megabytes. So I just want to point out the money, the tax money flows into the state to build out an infrastructure, to go to these schools, so not just can the library in the school, but the nurse can do a report when someone gets hurt, or telemedicine, or public safety, or all those things. And the legislature has very reluctantly not addressed them. We have not been going there. So this is a good bill. We need to move this out. We need to move it forward. The schools everywhere need this. Educational opportunities are incredibly significant for kids. They walk the halls selling curriculum and hardware and tablets. But if you don't have internet, it doesn't matter. And the curriculums are going more and more into connectivity online. And not just the speed, but the latency speeds matter. All kinds of things matter. And we need an infrastructure that can support that. If we can't we can't diversify our economy, which every one of us says we have, unless we have connectivity everywhere in the state. Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you very much, Representative Gutenberg. Appreciate your testimony and your knowledge. And I should say we miss you down here, but frankly, that vote failed 20-0 in the Senate. So what can I say?
Well, Senator, if I may, Senator, you said a comment to me earlier this year that the other body was trying hard to make the Senate look good, and I think I agree with you.
Oh, thank you. Yes, thank you very much. All right, let's move on quickly to the next person to testify, David Neese. Thank you, Mr. Neese, for being with us. Can you hear us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, clearly. Please go ahead.
Yeah, this is David Neese speaking for myself. The issue of the internet broadband speed came up when we were on the House Education Task Force. And our concern was basically you're just paying for operations with it. There's no incentive to upgrade the actual facilities. GCI just got done with a ring project, which is using microwaves, which is a very slow speed way of connecting. That was a $300 million investment. Quintillion was trying to run a fiber optic across the Arctic, and that project's gone belly up also. So I think more than addressing the fact that, you know, you have slow connectivity speed, I think Rep. Gutenberg was correct in that you have an infrastructure problem. Nobody has presented a proposal to what would happen if you ran fiber out to all these schools. If it's going to be the school's mission to do distance delivery and all the other things, and apparently it looks like the school and the library connections used for telemedicine and other aspects, I think it's probably a better idea than just saying we're going to up the speed and use the money that's already paid, is take a look at that broadband report and decide on a way that we can do this. And I agree with Rep. Gutenberg in that this needs to finally be put into some commerce or something else, because it is a basic need that is going unmet, and we just keep throwing more money at it, saying, oh, we'll speed it up, and then telecommunications people have to come up with supply at that speed, but you don't have schools now meeting your minimum. And when you raise it again, as your lady pointed out, that doesn't change anything. So it's the access point that is more of a problem than raising the speed. And so you do have people that are subsidizing this, and I think everybody would benefit if we had faster access, but that's going to take infrastructure. That's my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Nees. I appreciate your thoughts. Is there any further testimony in the room or online? I don't see any online or in the room, so we'll close public testimony and move on to a motion, please. Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 74, Version M, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. I'll take it and at ease. SJR 9. And Senator Costello, any additional comments?
Well, first of all, Mr. Chair, I want to thank you for having the hearing on this legislation earlier and also your intention to pass it out. I wanted to mention that I am appreciative of the co-sponsors. Senator Hoffman, yourself, and also Senator Olson have signed on as co-sponsors, along with Senator Begich, who originally signed on as a co-sponsor, had to temporarily remove his name, but hopes to put it back on due to a education conflict that he has that we're addressing in other legislation. One of the things I wanted to mention is that in the testimony that we heard originally, it became pretty evident that we are actually creating some havoc for school districts by passing education funding later in the session. Last session, as you know, we funded education early. We also forward funded it and added a total of $50 million to education, and that was appreciated by the districts. One of the other issues that I thought was interesting in the testimony is that one of the things that we need in Alaska is certainty for our economy, and that extends also to the education community. And at the end of the day, I think that students will benefit because their teachers will be there for the long haul, and administrators will not be in this annual churning of teachers in the schools because they have to, by law, issue a pink slip. And so I think that this is important legislation. I wanted to put on the record that originally when I had asked for the bill that I had hoped to put it in statute, we were told that putting it in the Constitution is the way to go so that you don't encumber. One legislature is not allowed to encumber another, and this would therefore put it in the Constitution, which is a more clear and secure place to have it. So again, I just want to thank you for hearing the bill and appreciate your support.
Thank you, Senator Costello. Any questions or comments? Yes, Senator Birch.
You know, I appreciate where this is, where this is headed. I guess the concern I have is compelling the legislature to commit such a significant amount of our resources, financial resources, by the 45th day of the session. I mean, we're fast approaching 90 days now, and I truly you recognize and understand the fact that you've got a school year that starts in September. Our fiscal year is somewhat different. I do have some reservations about obligating the legislature to. I mean, it'd be great if we could get everything done. I supported forward funding last year to help address this issue. I'm comfortable with forward funding. Heck, I'd like to get to a two-year budget cycle would be optimal. I think with SB 26 and POM, the POMV approach, we do have some stabilized revenue, at least to help that out. But I'm challenged with the idea of carving out such a significant portion of our resources, because we also have. Obviously crime is important, transportation is important, there's a myriad of very critical and vital issues, as important as education is, that we may need to have have a fair and balance those all out at the same time. So I'm a little concerned about kind of stepping this up early enough in the session. I mean, Basically, 45 days is the end of February. And, I mean, in this situation, the House wasn't even organized until the middle of February, as I recall. So, anyway, I mean, I think the intent's good. I'm concerned about how it might impact our budget development process.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Further comments? Senator Hughes.
And I appreciate the intent, too, and it's a real problem for school districts. It definitely is. I've been trying to think outside the box other ways we could fix it, because I share Senator Birch's concerns. Maybe we should start convening the legislature in October, November, take a Christmas break, and then come back and finish it, and that would solve it. So, but I do appreciate the sponsor's intent, and I recognize it is a problem for districts.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. That is outside the box, but I appreciate the thought. Thank you. October. Oh, wow. Okay, any further comments? Let's move to, we have invited testimony from Mr. Blackwell. Ellen Blackwell, School Finance Manager. Thank you for being with us, sir.
For the record, I'm Ellen Blackwell, School Finance Manager with the Department of Education and Early Development. We have a couple of fiscal notes associated with this, this resolution. The fiscal notes are zero fiscal notes. There's no expectation that this would impact the processes and procedures of the department. We currently develop these budgets in a normal time frame, and that would not disrupt that. The only thing it would do is put it upon the governor's office to submit a separate budget, education K-12 for public schools budget, which we already go through that process as it is, and it would just be a matter of splitting it out as a separate budget to be presented to the legislature. That's about the sum total of what I have.
Thank you, Mr. Blackwell. Any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate your comments. So we do have a couple of folks online that would like to speak to under public testimony. We'll open that up now. We'll go to Judy Ellidge. Ms. Ellidge, can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you very much, Chair. I am testifying. My name is Judy Ellidge. I'm from Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm a retired educator. And yes, I have received the pink slip in my past. I am testifying against this being a constitutional amendment. I do agree that there needs to be something different, but this is a process issue which does not require a constitutional amendment. It can be corrected by a change in the Alaska Statute 14.14060. Just change the date from May 1st to June 1st when the budgets have to be given to the department. Constitutional amendments must be used only for great policy changes, not a budget process. So I have a great concern about that. I also have, and I would think about how about a pilot program where we would have 3 years of forward funding if all of the districts agreed to keep their funding at exactly the same level, and see how that would work. Also, constitutionally mandating the K-12 education be funded first reduces the power of appropriation from the legislature, where there's a give and take. How arrogant to think that education is the most important thing in the state, where we have public safety, we have health and social services, and it locks up almost one-fourth of the budget of the entire state of Alaska. And my question is, what incentive is there for school boards to stop giving pay raises and benefits that they absolutely have no way of knowing how they will pay 3 to 5 years down the line? How do you know how much will be needed? And then unintended consequences for them to have a bigger piece of the budget pie early on, it concerns me, and I think it's extremely unfair. I think this could be done by law or try some pilot program situation. If a budget is approved late by the legislature, then a school district could propose two budgets to its local approving entity. One would be based on the current fiscal year, and a second budget based on likely K-12 budget. So I think there's creative ways to step out of the box, but a constitutional amendment to the Constitution for this is something I just absolutely could not support.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. I appreciate your comments.
Yes.
We'll move on to David Boyle.
Chairman Stevens, committee members, I'm David Boyle, and I'm speaking for myself. This constitutional amendment would seem to be a solution for a problem created by both the legislature and local taxing entities. As you know, Alaska Statute 1414-060 states districts shall submit the school budget for the following school year to the borough assembly by May 1st for approval of the total amount. So the state has imposed a deadline for the local taxing entity to approve a school district's budget. But the state legislature is unable to provide an education budget for the school district to base its budget on. And because the legislature cannot get its work done on time, it puts the local school districts in a terrible bind. This is a process issue, a calendar issue, and does not require a constitutional amendment to correct. It can be corrected by a change in the statute, by changing the date from May 1st to sometime in June. And constitutional amendments must be only used for big policy changes, not budget process issues. SJR 9 would severely limit the flexibility of the legislature in its appropriation of funds to all areas of the budget. If this constitutional amendment were to pass, then K-12 education would get first-in-line funding and would not have to compete, more importantly, for funding on an equal basis with public safety, transportation, and health and social services. It could be possible that K-12 would get such a large increase in funding to the detriment of other vital state needs. How would you fund these other state needs then? An income tax, stealing the PFDs, a statewide property tax, or even a sales tax? That puts you, the legislators, in a real bind. Constitutionally mandated K-12 education be funded first reduces your power of appropriation from the legislature where there is a give and take among all the competing interests to include public safety, et cetera. If this constitutional amendment were passed, then other special constituencies may also want their needs placed in the Alaska Constitution and passed early in the legislative session. For example, DHSS could cite the fact that they provide vital health care services to low-income Alaskans, which they do. So they should have a big piece of the budget pie early on. Next in line might be public safety. And who can deny that without the necessary law enforcement, the Alaska crime rate could grow even higher, and on until every department's budgets are funded early in the process. We've heard from the supporters of the constitutional amendment that they cannot possibly manage the pink slip circus due to the legislature's late approval of the K-12 budget. And because of this, they have to pink slip teachers, some who may never return. By the way, have you ever heard of a school district pink slipping food service people, bus drivers, custodians? No. That's because pink slipping teachers is a tool that school districts use to play mind games with parents, students, legislators, and most importantly, teachers. They wreak havoc with teachers' futures when there is no need to do this. Would Alaska Airlines pink slip its pilots while keeping the flight attendants, mechanics, and customer service folks on the payroll? No. We pay these managers in the school districts big bucks to make the tough decisions. Now they need to start earning their pay. Here's the crux of the problem. The school districts are free to use state money for whatever manner they wish. For example, they can use transportation funds to buy playground equipment. Worse yet, intensive needs money at 13 times the ADM is not directed to those students who need the resources. And why not? Well, the bottom line, in education, all money is fungible. Here's the solution. Pay attention. The legislature needs to fence the money or earmark the money for specific requirements. We don't need a constitutional amendment. We need to hold officials accountable for spending education money responsibly and where the legislature intended them to be spent. This can be fixed with legislation. Fence or earmark K-12 money for specific educational requirements. Here's an example of poor management. The Anchorage School District just increased its mixed budget by 10%, a whopping $80 million, and they expect you to pay for it. But what are they thinking? And then they just gave the AEA members a raise and will pay more for their health insurance. Last week, they just passed a new contract for food service employees with a raise, and the ASD or taxpayer will also pay more for their health insurance. What I don't get is why ASD complains about the high cost of health care. Seems rather irresponsible. In conclusion, I strongly oppose this constitutional amendment. We should be focusing on student achievement. Putting K-12 funding in the Alaska Constitution will not improve student achievement nor ensure that public funds are spent wisely and that they should be the focus. And I want to thank you for your hard work and thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Boyle. We certainly appreciate your thoughts and your comments. Any further testimony from the public? None online, none in the room, so we will close the public hearing. And just to remind folks that this resolution has a referral next to Judiciary and then to Finance, so it'll be heard in two other committees as well. And Senator Hughes, if we could have a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Joint Resolution 9, Version S, from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease to sign this. Committee back to order. Any other comments or questions before we adjourn?
I do.
Yes.
I just wanted to say I really appreciate individuals calling in and testifying. I've had several constituents call in. Judy Elledge is one of them, and I thought some of her ideas were very interesting, and well, I'm definitely listening. And also I wanted to mention that David Neese is often calling into this committee, and I also appreciate that he really does follow what the legislature is doing and commits quite a bit of his own personal time to reviewing bills, which is really great that the public is following what we're doing and such a part of the process.
Thank you, Senator. If there's no further business before us, the Senate Education Committee will stand adjourned.